Your conference is being recorded.
Well, welcome, everybody. This is our first conference call for RF103 Value Northern Recreation, Arts, Culture, and Sport. And I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this from the traditional territory of the Kwamundun First Nation and Tonkwashen Council. This learning event is our last of our year four program cycle, which our program cycle runs from September through till May. And today, this learning event will encourage you, and it's pretty fun learning event. It encourages you to explore the history and the impact of the Arctic Winter Games and NAIG, which is the North American Indigenous Games, and to describe the uniqueness of recreation, culture, arts, and sport activities and events across the North, and to discuss the role of yourselves as community recreation leaders in relation to these activities and events. So I'm going to start with a quick round of introductions, as we always do on our calls, just so it helps me recognize voices and remember and visualize where everybody's at, so I can imagine our big, ginormous geographic circle. And then we're going to chat specifically today about the impact of Arctic Winter Games and NAIG in your community, in your territory, and across Canada. So I'd like to begin with a round of introductions, and Carly, I'm going to put you on the spot first, and actually I'll do an introduction as well, and that gives you a chance to think about how you're going to answer the one question that I have here. So for our first round, we'll go Carly, Jed, Kelly, Eliza, and Megan. And so the question that I have for you is, when you introduce yourself, please tell us about a major games experience that you had, or it can be somebody you know has had. And if you don't know anyone, that's totally okay too. So as you guys know, I'm Caroline and I'm based out of Whitehorse. And I first came to the Yukon about 33 years ago. And I came up in the role for alpine skiing, and that was long before Mount Sema existed. So I trained people to be ski instructors, and I also started like a racing program. And so I was really lucky. I got to go to Slave Lake in 1994 for Arctic Winter Games, and that's probably long before most of your times. And then I also got to go to the Canada Winter Games and coach. They were in Grand Prairie in 95, but unfortunately the skiing was out in Jasper, so we didn't get to take in a lot of the games experience that time. So that's kind of my major games experience. So, Carly, over to you to introduce yourself and tell us about a major games experience that either you've had or someone you know has had.
So my name's Carly. I'm from Whitehorse. Growing up, I was involved in dance, so I never did any sports for Arctic. And it was kind of, our studio would choose a couple dancers to go for the arts contingual component. So we would do the opening ceremony performing. I never went, but my sister went a few times. And yeah, it was just, I've seen the videos of them performing with the other territories, and they would kind of collaborate and do one big show together. So yeah, I think it's really cool to meet other art performers, even if you're not really involved in any sports growing up. So, yeah.
That's a great example of the cultural aspect of the Arctic Winter Games. So thanks for sharing that. Over to you, Jed. If you'd like to introduce yourself, tell us what community you're in, and if you've had a major games experience or someone you know has had one. And if not, no worries.
Hi, I am Jed Sharp from Teslin, and probably the biggest thing that I've done is going to a little community, minor hockey tournaments throughout the Yukon a few times with my community team. I haven't really done much other than that.
Awesome. Well, I mean, some of those small hockey tournaments are a great place to start. You know, they introduce you to other communities, other people, and give you a experience outside of your own community. And that's really important for our small communities across the North. So thanks for sharing that, Jed. Kelly, over to you to introduce yourself, and if you or someone you know has had a major games experience, maybe you'd like to share that.
Yeah, for sure. Excuse me. My name's Kelly. I work for Quanlin Dunn First Nation in their youth recreation department. I had, the closest I personally have gotten is I was going to volunteer for the games that were canceled, unfortunately, in 2020 due to COVID. Other than that, I haven't been to any. My cousins have participated in quite a few. They were born and raised in Inuvik. And so they've been to a few, and they were, you know, tell me about how awesome it was to meet people from other areas, and, you know, you exchange your pins and your jackets, and you just, it sounded like a really amazing, you know, connected experience from what I heard.
Well, that's great. Thanks for sharing that, Kelly. And yeah, that it's that social aspect I think really makes especially the Arctic Winter Games. So that's really neat. And that was definitely a sad day when the 2020 ones were canceled. So hopefully you get a chance to volunteer at the next games that are hosted in Whitehorse. Thanks for sharing. Eliza, did you make it back to the call?
Yeah, I did. And I think, sorry, I'll just update you on Lindsay. I think she's just kind of getting settled, so I don't know if she'll join, but she said she'd reach out if she doesn't make the call today.
Okay.
So for games experience, yeah. So I played indoor soccer for Team UConn in 2000 when Whitehorse hosted the games. And it was interesting because there was actually a whooping cough epidemic, I guess, going around. And so what ended up happening for that games is the UConn chef team decided to have all of the, like, Team UConn teams not stay in the dorms for that games in 2000. And it really impacted our experience as a team in the games because you weren't kind of just, like, in with the dorms and, you know, you get to hang out. It seemed a little bit different than other experiences. So, you know, it was still good and it was still fun and you still get to experience the games. But when you're really, like, in the dorms, living it day by day, it's just a different experience. I was also a part of the first women's outdoor soccer team from Team UConn to participate at the Canada Summer Games, and that was in 2001. And I feel like we were in maybe Hamilton, Ontario, somewhere in Ontario, and that was an awesome experience to be a part of a first women's team from the UConn to go and represent the UConn for all women. And so I was really, you know, proud to be a part of that. And then on the other side of games, of course, planning for Arctic Winter Games for 2020 that were canceled. So I was a facility lead for Canada Game Center and UConn College. So lots of planning, the back end work for that. So yeah, you know, we'll get there. We'll do it again. So I was excited to be a part of all of those things, and it definitely shaped my sport career. Attending those as a young teenager.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that, Eliza. It's interesting to hear, you know, going back to 2000, how, you know, some sort of illness or disease affected the games, and then we had COVID in 22 years later. So there's definitely things that influence how things move forward. And, you know, I imagine politics will also affect the 2022 Arctic Winter Games that are being held in January 2023. So, thanks. Over to you, Megan, if you'd like to introduce yourself, your community, and share any major games experience that you've had.
Yeah, my name is Megan Hashi. I am a Sport and Recreation Development Officer with the Government of Nunavut. I am from Baker Lake, Nunavut. My major games experiences I attended MIG 2014 in Regina, Saskatchewan, and I was supposed to participate in the Western Canada Games in 2015, but our basketball team ended up not sending the female team for different reasons. And then I was also in AWG 2016 in Nuuk, Greenland. For all those games, I was a player with basketball for Team Nunavut. And then this summer, I will be attending the Canada Summer Games in Niagara as part of mission staff for the first time. That's really exciting.
Oh, that's awesome. What sports do you have under you for mission staff?
I'm going to be going as a comms person for the division, as well as our youth ambassador program chaperone.
Oh, that's so great. What a wonderful experience you'll have. It'll be really nice to get back to that major games after, you know, the 2 or 3 years with everything being canceled. So enjoy. Thanks a lot for sharing that, Megan. Joshua, I know you said you're on the call, so over to you if you'd like to introduce yourself. And what we're doing is sharing either a major games experience that you've had or that you know someone else has had. And if not, that's okay too.
My name is Joshua. I live here in Sparrow, Yukon. I don't have actually any major sports experience. I do coach here in Sparrow, hockey, basketball, pickleball, badminton, a lot of sports, but I've never really played. I do have a major game experience with another kid that I coached as a goaltender. He went to Greenland for the, I think, Winter Games there. That was pretty awesome. It was super exciting to watch him succeed, and now he's down in Vancouver doing his thing. Not playing for Vancouver, I'll just put that one out there.
What sport was that for?
Hockey. Yeah, he was a goalie for hockey.
Wow, that's pretty awesome, because I'm sure those of you who are in small, really small communities like not Whitehorse or Yellowknife understand how hard it is to make the territorial team for a team, or for a team sport like hockey. Because there's always usually a huge commitment as far as travel and stuff like that. And I think in Nunavut, it's probably even harder to be in an outlying community and make a team sport to go to games. So that's pretty special. Thanks for sharing that, Joshua. Well, thanks, everybody. I really appreciate you sharing your experiences. As you can see, major games are a way that offers sort of unique sport, recreation, arts, and cultural experiences, not only for the athletes, but also for artists like Carly mentioned, for coaches, officials, mission staff like what Megan's going to do, volunteers like Eliza mentioned, the behind-the-scenes organizing people, spectators who come to watch, and also for the host communities as a whole. So you might have had a chance to watch some of the videos that were linked in the RS-103 presentation. And if you haven't, by all means, take a look at some of them, because most of them aren't long except for one which I actually have permission to share with you that otherwise you would have to pay for, so that's kind of cool. But as you can see from the videos, or you may have learned, major games actually have the power to heal. They have the power to develop pride and confidence. They encourage the development of skills and attitudes, primarily in young people who will be our community leaders in the future. So, you know, when you have young people in your community, it's great to be able to encourage them to participate if that works out given their circumstances and things like that. Sadly, the pandemic, as we all know, caused postponement of major games, beginning with the 2020 Arctic Winter Games in Whitehorse, and then MAG, and even the Olympics. And as I mentioned, even the 2022 Arctic Winter Games, which should have been held in March, are postponed to January 2023. So we're going to take a few minutes now just to learn a bit more about two of the major games, Arctic Winter Games and MAG. And, you know, different people have different experiences and understandings, so I just wanted to jump into a bit of the history and share it with you, and then ask for your thoughts on those. So for a bit of background, and this is on slides 7 and 8 if you want to follow along on the slides, the first Arctic Winter Games was actually held in Yellowknife back in 1970. And the 50th anniversary of the Games was to be celebrated in Whitehorse in 2020. The interesting thing is that it was Pierre Elliott Trudeau who opened those Games in 1970, and I wasn't sure, but I would imagine Justin Trudeau would have probably come to the 2020 one. So kind of neat to have that connection 50 years later. Not that I'm political, so I'm just putting that out there. I really encourage you to watch free of charge the Arctic. So that's the one that I have permission and a link that you can use. Otherwise, if you just Googled it, you would be paying a little bit to watch it. But it explores the history and the impacts of the Arctic Winter Games since 1970. So it's a 50-minute documentary that was produced by Midnight Light in Whitehorse, and it follows the stories of participants from across the 9 contingents as they prepare to compete in the 2020 Arctic Winter Games. So if you have a friend to sit down and watch it with, or family or kids or something like that, it's pretty cool and inspiring because it does take you to the different countries and the different cultures and different places. The focus of the Arctic Winter Games is the same today as it was in 1970. These games aim to involve many participants. It's not you have to make a certain standard in order to participate, although there are trials to make your territorial team. So the success of the games is directly related to the way in which athletic competition, so competition with among sports, but also that cultural exchange that Carly mentioned, where they bring there's always a cultural contingent from each team. And Carly, you did a great job of explaining how over the week of the Arctic Winter Games, they work together and create something that they share on stage at the closing ceremony. So that's really kind of a neat cultural opportunity. It means that people can participate that might not be athletes or might not want to. Another opportunity is Megan mentioned the Nunavut Youth Ambassador Program, and that's a great opportunity. That program specifically lasts for a year, and it sort of culminates with youth having an opportunity to go with Team Nunavut. They're part of Team Nunavut, but they actually volunteer rather than compete. So that's another way to, you know, encourage social interaction among many different teams from different countries. There is, at the end of each Arctic Winter Games, the Hodgson Trophy for Fair Play and Team Spirit is awarded, and that stays on display in Sport Yukon, in Whitehorse, Yukon. So I'm just going to do a round, and this time I'm going to ask Jed, if you don't mind, we're going to start with you this time so that we don't always put Carly on the spot and start first with Carly. And my question is really broad. It's just, do you have any questions or thoughts or reflections to share with people about the Arctic Winter Games? Like, what stands out for you? Is interesting? Do you have a question about how it works, about how you could get kids in your community involved? And if you don't have anything, that's fine too. So just an opportunity to share kind of what's going through our mind in regards to the Arctic Winter Games. So Jed, any thoughts or reflections or questions that you'd like to share or ask?
So I've noticed that it's mostly like things like Olympic stuff that you can include in these games, but they also have like Arctic sports involved in it, and I think that's cool.
Yeah, it's really neat to bring in Arctic sports and also Dene games because there is a difference between the two. So, and those sports are ones, as you point out, like they're ones that are played around sort of the circumpolar north, if you want to mention it that way. So, you know, teams from Alaska are pretty big into Arctic sports or Inuit games. There's different sort of terminology for that, or Inuit sport actually, Arctic games. So thanks. That's a really good observation, Jed. Kelly, how about yourself? Any questions, thoughts, reflections about Arctic Winter Games?
I think it was, it might be from next week, but I am going a bit squirrely just at home, so I listened to all those recordings for next week, which were great, like the little links.
Yeah.
And there was one that there was a presentation on all, like, the meaning behind, excuse me, all of the different sport activities for, I believe it was the, I could be getting this one wrong because I'm kind of hazy in my head, but the dinner games or the, and it was just explaining, you know, the history behind it and the reasoning behind it for, so that, you know, if you have to carry, you know, a fish by the gills for a long distance or pull netting up, so to keep individuals ready for survival skills, basically out while they're traveling, following their food sources and such. And I thought that was really interesting to learn. I didn't know the history behind it, and it's
That's great. Thanks for that reflection. I'm just going to jump ahead, Megan, not to put you on the spot or anything, but I know that Inuit sport and Inuit games is big in Nunavut. Do you want to add anything to or expand on what Kelly just mentioned as to the significance and meaning of Inuit sports and games?
As she was mentioning, the majority of the games, like, have some sort of meaning or connection behind them to our everyday lives. So, like, when Inuit were living out on the land and they didn't have access to, like, even balls or, like, games or different things to play, so they kind of had to keep themselves entertained and keep themselves busy with what they had, and that's where a lot of the games come from. So, like, wrestling each other or kicking something hanging from the ceiling. It all really relates to, like, the strength and endurance that is needed when you're living in such a harsh environment. So they definitely are very interesting to learn about, and very, they have a rich history behind them.
That's great. Thanks for expanding on that. And that's really interesting that you picked that up, Kelly. So in the Yukon, which is where you are, you can reach out to Yukon Aboriginal Sports Circle, and they will come into your programs and help with some programming around Arctic sports and also Dene games. So if that's something you guys would like to work into your programming at all, that's an opportunity to connect with them. So just thought I'd mention that. Thank you. Okay, coming back to our circle then, Eliza, do you have any questions, thoughts, or reflections to share about the Arctic Winter Games?
I think just a reflection, more so that the pin trading. So I think when you're part of those games, it is something that is changing with the times, and, you know, you might not see as much, but some of those pins are, like, highly coveted. So it's a cool experience to go into, like, the pin trading room, and everyone has their little books and, trying to collect everyone else, all the delegate, nation, community pins. I really enjoyed that experience just for myself, and I still have kept all of those pins from all of those years participating in games and competitions. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's neat. I'm remembering the 2012 Arctic Winter Games were in Whitehorse, and I was the venue coordinator for biathlon, and I think it was around that time they came out with these ones that would fit together. So you had to, it was like a jigsaw puzzle of pins, and you had to collect all the ones, and then it made a bigger shape. So that was really neat too. Thanks for sharing that. Megan, any other questions or reflections or thoughts to share about the Arctic Winter Games? And thanks for jumping in earlier too.
The AWG is huge for Nunavum of them youth. Like, we all live in small, isolated communities with limited resources and limited opportunities. Like, it's almost unheard of for someone from Nunavut to make it in an area like sport and recreation, because we are just not provided with the same training and the same opportunities that the rest of the country does. So AWG is kind of like our own small-scale Olympics, where if you go to any community, anyone you talk to will be someone or know of someone who has gone to AWG or have family that have gone, and it's really great to see it coming back next year. After the 2020 AWGs were canceled, it was pretty disappointing. It was understandable, but like, I had people like my younger sister who was supposed to go for the first time, so it's going to be really exciting to see it come back.
Yeah, and I think they might have changed some of the, what are they called, the sports packages to allow, you know, some of those people who might have missed out if their age falls in that gap to go. I'm not sure, but I think I heard some talk of that. So hopefully your sister will be able to go. And it is cool. I when I was doing some work for the government of Nunavut, I was speaking with someone in Joe Haven, and she was an adult. And she actually went to Arctic Winter Games back when they used to have adult teams. I know my husband went for volleyball in the 90s, and he was an adult at the time. And she said how meaningful it was for her, even as an adult, to be able to go. So thanks for sharing that, Megan. I appreciate it. Joshua, no worries. You mentioned that not much to add. We're going to talk about how you can work with your small community, you know, to support kids going to Arctic Winter Games a little later in the call. And then coming back to Carly, Carly, any questions, thoughts, or reflections about the Arctic Winter Games?
Even though I never went, I think it's interesting how throughout the years and social media, how it was probably a lot easier for people to stay connected. Like, as soon as Facebook started, I'm sure everyone was adding each other as friends, and I know from my friends that went, they still have them on Facebook, and they, like, it's a cool connection if they ever, you know, are in the same place. And I'm just like, yeah, thinking back, I'm sure that was really hard to connect with people and stay connected after the games were over if there was no social media. And I'm sure it's even different now. People are probably adding each other on Instagram and TikTok and, you know, even making content with people from the other territories. So, yeah, I think it's interesting how social media even connects us further from territories. And, yeah, just being able to stay connected afterwards is probably a huge deal.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You're absolutely right. I mean, when I went to games, there was no social media. You know, I had to go out on the radio or something like that, or get faxed, for those of you who can remember what a fax machine is. So good point to add. Thanks, Carly. So moving on to slides 9 to 11, which describe the North American Indigenous Games, which is a mouthful to say, so we tend to say just NAIG for short. NAIG is a multi-sport event, and it involves Indigenous North American athletes, so different group than Arctic Winter Games. And it's being staged or hosted intermittently, so not on a consistent schedule necessarily since 1990, just due to various fluctuations. I think the cycle for NAIG is every 3 years. If I'm wrong, maybe somebody can pop in the chat what the cycle for NAIG is, but I have a feeling it's every 3 years, generally speaking. Their logo is really interesting. There's four arrows in the NAIG logo, and it represents the need to develop the mental, physical, cultural, and spiritual aspects that are essential for well-being and development. The history of the NAIG Games is interesting. The first ones were actually held in Edmonton, and today there's more than 16 sport categories and more than 5,000 participants. So that's what they're expecting at the next NAIG Games. I think of NAIG as an important pathway to reconciliation. So back in 2017, when NAEG was held in Toronto, they came out with hashtag 88. And number 88 is one of the calls to action of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And it states that all levels of government should act to ensure long-term Indigenous athlete growth and development through continued support of NAEG. So it's pretty interesting. That puts NAEG on a political level as compared to Arctic Winter Games, because it's directly stated in the TRC calls to action. So if you see hashtag 88 in association with NAEG, that's what it's in reference to. So the next NAEG
Hi, Carolyn.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to let you know, this is Nadine from Colin Dunn Youth Rec. The rest of the rec team is on the call.
Awesome. So we have Nadine and Dana and Serena?
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you. Are you guys in the chat? I just have some of my chat covered up.
No, we're not in the chat. I'm just on my phone here. I can
okay.
chat though.
No worries. We'll just add you at the end of our next circle. So that sounds great. Thanks for letting me know you guys are on the call.
Yes, sorry.
I'm glad you interrupted me, because sometimes I get on a roll there. So thank you. So just to sort of summarize then, the next NAEG Games will be held in July 2023. So not this summer, but next summer. And they're going to be held in, hosted by the Mi'kmaq Nation in Nova Scotia. It's anticipated that 756 Indigenous nations will come together to celebrate, share, and reconnect at the Games through sport and culture. So that number, 756, just, I find that amazing. So that's really neat. So I'm just wondering if we can do the same round of conversation around the NAEG Games as we did with Arctic Winter Games. And we're going to start with Kelly this time around. So my question to you is, what questions, thoughts, or reflections do you have in regards to the NAEG Games? And you can, if you want to pop your answer in the chat, you can, or, you're welcome to pass. You don't have to answer all of these questions. So, Kelly, any thoughts, questions, or reflections about NAEG?
I need to just give that a second to think.
Awesome. That's totally okay.
Yeah.
No worries. Eliza, how about yourself? Any thoughts or reflections or questions about NAEG?
No, I don't have a ton. Like, I don't have a ton of experience with NAEG, but the one thing that I really do hope for in the future is that there becomes more awareness around NAEG, and I think unless I know in the Yukon, like, Aboriginal Sport Circle is obviously heavy involved, but I feel like it definitely isn't as much on the radar as Arctic Winter Games. So my hopes for that for the future is just that more people learn about NAEG and the positive impact that it brings to the North. And yeah, anyway, that's really it.
Yeah, that's a really good point, is that awareness about it. So going around our circle, Megan, how, you know, you just heard Eliza mention the difference in the Yukon between the perception of Arctic Winter Games or the awareness of Arctic Winter Games and NAEG. Would it be, you know, and you talked about how impactful Arctic Winter Games is in Nunavut and how important. What do you think about NAEG? How does that stand in Nunavut?
Pretty similar. It's not as popular as AWG, but it also is seen as a pretty big deal. I think it's just because not as many people know about it, because Team Nunavut always sends a bunch of teams to AWG every time around, but there aren't as many teams that qualify and are able to send their teams to NAEG. But there definitely is a growing of awareness surrounding it. I know for the coaches, for example, they have to have a specific training module completed to be able to participate in NAEG, and we don't have many people qualified to facilitate that here in Nunavut, so it is a little bit harder for people to be able to participate, but fortunately we are working on, like, making some of those resources more available and just spreading the awareness of NEG, and I'm excited to see it grow even further in the future.
That's great, and definitely complimentary because it's the summer, so it, you know, if you take part in Arctic Winter Games, it might be something to lead up to, and there's a lot of athletes that are successful in both summer sport and winter sport. So do you have any other thoughts or reflections or questions about NEG, Megan? Because I kind of directed your comment there. Anything else that comes to mind?
Not really, aside from what's already been said. Again, it's also exciting to see it come back because the one that was supposed to be in 2021 was also postponed, so it's interesting to see how the games have continued to work through these issues and figure out different ways of continuing on the great work that they do, and like just finding ways to continue supporting the athletes from everywhere.
Yeah, that's neat. It's sort of like perseverance, right? Or a dedication and commitment to continuing despite all of what the world's gone through in the last few years. So thanks, Megan. And moving, Joshua said he's going to pass. So over to Carly. Carly, any thoughts, reflections, questions about NEG?
Yeah, I think similar to kind of everyone else, honestly, it's just the first time I've ever heard about it, so it wasn't really taught to me in school. It's never been brought up until now, so I actually know nothing about it. And maybe I just have a question, like, what is the biggest difference between AWG and NEG? Is it more specific sports for NEG, or is it Indigenous athletes only? Like, I don't know, what's the difference?
Yeah, so Arctic Winter Games, it's the Circumpolar North that sends teams. So there's teams from Russia and Finland and Greenland, Nunavut, Nunavik, NWT Northern Alberta, and that's an interesting story why Northern Alberta's in there, Yukon and Alaska. So that's Arctic Winter Games, and it's any residents from those geographic locations. NEG was specifically to foster Indigenous sport, and so it was sort of conceived as a slightly higher level, maybe not a higher level of sport, but it's a North American one, so anybody from Canada or the U.S. So you can imagine that the competition could be different when you put in the big provinces like BC and Ontario and places in the States as well. So that is for Indigenous people, and Megan's also answered that very succinctly. Thank you, Megan, in the chat. So thanks a lot, Megan. That's great. I'm not sure if you're in the chat, Carly, but Megan said Arctic Winter Games, as I explained, very long-winded, is only for northern regions, but anyone can participate, and NEG is for all of North America, but only Indigenous people participate. And there's also a difference in the sports because Arctic Winter Games takes place in the winter, so you have snowshoeing and then cross-country skiing and things like that, snow snake, whereas NEG takes place in the summer. So you can have soccer, lacrosse, definitely different sports. So thank you. That's a really good question.
Awesome.
Thank you for raising it. That's good. Jed, any thoughts or reflections or questions about NEG?
No, I don't think so this time.
Okay, thanks. And how about Nadine, Dana, Serena, any thoughts or questions about NEG or reflections from you?
Just recently, this is Serena. I put in an interest form for the NEG badminton team here in the Yukon, and she didn't get back to me until after the deadline. I had a few questions for her because the last time I coached was probably whenever I was in high school, and I don't talk to my teachers anymore, so I couldn't get a reference from
So that was just, like, my question that I asked her, like, can I give you another reference? And she didn't get back to me until after 2 days. I really like Nate as a concept. I have been to myself, both for badminton, but I do find that even though it says North American Indigenous Games, I don't see a lot of people from Mexico there. I also find that every time it goes to the States, it's usually canceled that year. And I do recall that it's every 2 years. So I do remember that it was canceled one in Wisconsin the year after I was not eligible to go. And the year before I wasn't eligible to go, it was in New York. And both of them got canceled. So, like, I would really like to see, like, the organization really push the American government to help fund these events, considering that it is part of a treaty. But I do like the sport, as, yeah, it is nice, and it had been a big highlight in my life whenever I did go. But I do have, like, quite a few issues with me.
Yeah, they definitely have had challenges with the organization as compared to Arctic Winter Games. So that's interesting that you raised that. If you look through some of the documents and reports, there definitely are, they have had challenges. And as you correctly point out, more when it takes place in the States and things like that. So that's neat that you noticed that. I'm just curious, who was it that you reached out to in the Yukon?
Just looking it up right now.
Was it somebody at Yukon Aboriginal Sports Circle, or was it at Sport and Rec Branch? Sorry, I kind of lost you there, but you can pop it in the chat or let me know a later point in time. I just want to make sure. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
It was the Aboriginal Sports Circle and a lady that I was talking to there.
Okay, like Rose or someone like that? Yeah. So you can also direct questions to Sport and Rec Branch. And that leads me to remind everybody that I have included contact information for you on slide number 12. So in the Yukon, although it doesn't have the Sport and Rec Branch there, it's got Sport Yukon and Yukon Aboriginal Sports Circle. One of the two should be able to answer your questions, but you can also go to your government as well. In NWT, there's an Aboriginal Sports Circle of NWT and Sport North. And then in Nunavut, it's mostly the Sport and Rec Division, right, Megan, that looks after both NAIG and Arctic Winter Games?
Yeah, it's mostly our division.
Yeah, because of capacity a lot, there is, if anyone's interested, there is a brand new Nunavut Arctic Sports Association, which is pretty cool. So I've included a link to their Facebook page. Kelly, any thoughts there to add after we've gone around the circle, or you just enjoyed listening to other people's reflections?
Enjoyed listening to other people's reflections.
That's great. Thanks. Well, thanks so much, everybody. You know, it really is apparent that in small communities or in small communities within communities, yourselves as recreation leaders are often going to be the point of contact for local youth who want to try out for a territorial team. And both Eliza and Megan sort of alluded to the need to raise awareness of NAIG. And in some of our small communities, we actually also need to raise awareness of Arctic Winter Games, too. Maybe not so much in Nunavut, because both of those games fall under the division. But when you're looking at nonprofits in the Yukon and in NWT sort of facilitating that awareness, sometimes they don't have the same capacity as what government might have. So, you know, check in with those contact lists and just think about how you, working with young people, can facilitate experiences through major games. So I just have one last question to sort of ask you to wrap up our conversation. And we're going to start with Eliza this time on our circle. And my question is, just in about 10 or 15 seconds so we don't go over time, can you just share what you can do as a recreation leader to ensure that major games have an impact in your community, whether it's on people or the economy in your community or in your territory as well? So what's one thing that you could do to ensure that major games have an impact where you live and work? Eliza, any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think for me, just being in the setting of the Canada Game Center, one thing that I can help with would be to get volunteers, because we all know that these games wouldn't be possible without a huge amount of volunteers from our community, and we have really good access to having face-to-face conversations and encouraging that volunteerism on a daily basis in the Game Center.
That's great. Like, you're right. Like, none of these games would happen without volunteers. So if you can make a difference as to how the games roll by influencing people to volunteer, that is amazing. So thank you, Eliza. Megan, how about yourself? I know you're in a role where you do have influence over these major games. Any other thoughts about what you can do to make sure that there's an impact maybe in your community of Baker Lake?
Yeah, outside of work, I'm also a volunteer with our Youth Athletic Association. So I am part of the board, and our board is, our association helps the community's athletics a lot, whereas we'll provide funding or resources or training for coaches and athletes. And then I am also a coach with the girls' basketball team here, and part of that was submitting our athletes' video submissions to be part of Team Nunavut basketball team for AWG. So that's just a couple different ways that I help out.
Yeah, so that's quite a few ways in your own community, not to mention what you already do in your role at work. And it is interesting, I'm not sure if anybody, I know we don't have anyone from NWT on the call, but I don't know if in UConn we actually do video submissions to be on a team, but it's a really neat way to break down some of the barriers, I think, and to make those trials a little less stress-free for people from small communities who usually end up going to the bigger communities for the trials. So thanks for mentioning that. Joshua, any thoughts as to what, oh, sorry, Megan, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we usually have tournaments as well, and that's usually how we do the tryouts. But because of COVID, that was impossible. So that was how they got around that issue.
Yeah, and I think it's a great opportunity to keep doing that in a way because, I can imagine it might not cause quite as much stress and anxiety and not place as much need to travel, too. So thanks. Joshua, any thoughts about for you as a recreation leader in Faro, what you now know about major games? How could you help there be some impact in your community? Like you mentioned, supporting somebody to go as a goalie for hockey. Is there anything else that you would do or could do on a regular basis to get that major games experience happening in your community?
Yeah, absolutely. To reach out to the different communities throughout the north, our kids here and in these small communities, they struggle with being able to play a game where there's challenging. Like if they're not being challenged, there's hockey. We've never played a game of hockey in 12 years that I've been a part of Farrell. We've never been able to get out of our community and play another community. So that's one of the biggest challenges we have here. And a lot of the kids, they just wouldn't know what to do if they got into a big game such as that. But I think consistently reach out to the other communities and get other kids involved and, yeah.
Yeah, so kind of like Jed mentioned his experience going to minor hockey tournaments around the territory, so to try and introduce kids, I guess, to whether it's a regional tournament like Ross River, Faro, Carmax and Pelly type tournament or something that happens in Dawson or something like that so that they get those experiences. Because you're right, it's really hard to go to a trials if you've never had that experience before. Thanks, Joshua. Carly, any thoughts from you now as to, what you might be able to do as a recreation leader to make sure major games have an impact in your community?
Yeah, I think I almost wish I was still in the dance world, because I think my experience was the same, six kids always got to go for the cultural contingent, and I felt kind of jaded, and it was more of like an elitist decision that, whoever got to go. So I think if I still had control, I think I would push, either rotating or making sure everyone at least had one chance to go. Because, yeah, out of the maybe four opportunities I had, I never got the opportunity to go, and it was always the same people that I danced with. So I think it's really important to, also understand it's not about being, who's the best, and it's, giving everyone the opportunity to experience that, and just as a rec leader, just kind of recognizing that and maybe stopping those elitist decisions before they happen.
Yeah, that's a big difference. You just nailed a big difference in my mind between sport and recreation. And people always say dance isn't sport, but there is a lot of competition, as you just mentioned, in dance. So in some ways, dance is more like sport at that elite level. So really important, like you said, to try and give more people the opportunity. And Arctic Winter Games is about participation. It's not about being the best. It's about bringing people together to have that experience. So you raised some really good points there. Thanks for sharing that. Jed, any thoughts about what you can do as a recreation leader to make sure major games have an impact in your community?
Yeah, I think it just needs to be talked about more in my community, because often it's just, I don't know, it doesn't get talked about much here.
Yeah, and, the Yukon has kind of this dynamic that sometimes it gets talked about in the big communities, but not in the small ones. So, and that the small ones sometimes get left behind. So really important to do what both Eliza and Megan mentioned, which is to raise more awareness across our territories of opportunities that people have. Thanks, Jed. Nadine, Dana, and Serena, anything that you think you might be able to do to make sure these major games have an impact in your community? And maybe you can speak specifically to the community of Kwamundun First Nations.
Yeah, well, I think that a big barrier is facilities and equipment and access to qualified coaches. All of these things, I think, are big barriers here. I mean, we have a gym here, for example, but if we wanted to put a swim team together, that would mean, trying to get to the CGC or, there's definitely some barriers there. And also just with qualified coaches, you want to give kids the best chance to gain a competitive edge. But, as rec staff, we're not, Green is a could be a badminton coach, but outside of that, we can't really provide skilled instruction to kids. So I think a great way that we could provide, some more impact for these games is helping facilitate coaches and facilities and time for kids to really build on their skills so that they can go there feeling like they do have a competitive edge and can perform well at these sorts of games.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, the access to facilities and equipment and qualified coaches is, I think, an experience of many small communities. I think Megan would probably agree that that's also the situation in most of Nunavut communities, too. Number of NWT ones and a number of the Yukon ones. My one suggestion to you being in the Yukon is that you maybe reach out to Sport Yukon and have a conversation with Tracy Bilski, who's the executive director, because she's connected to the different sport governing bodies, and the sport governing bodies are responsible for developing sport and providing support. So some of the ones like soccer have been really good at doing outreach, other ones aren't as great at doing outreach. So you know, it could be identifying some that your youth might be interested in or that you want to develop further, and maybe inviting them in to do a, you know, there's things like multi-sport week where you could have a different sport come in each day and do a like a summer day camp where you, you know, introduce them to a different sport each day, something like that. So that might be a, something to follow up if you wanted to follow down some sort of recreational sport leading towards, you know, a major games experience type opportunity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. This is actually a really nice contact. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you want a bit more information, just stay on the call after and I'll fill in the gaps a bit more because I noticed we're just 1 minute after the hour already. So Kelly, any thoughts from you, last minute thoughts about what you can do, or would you just say sort of ditto to what Nadine, Dana, and Serena shared?
That's actually what I was going to say also. But, you know, on our end, we can help facilitate, bring people in, you know, create the connections and provide space. So, yeah, Nadine took it away and then said it very well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Well, I'd like to thank all of you for joining the call today and for contributing to today's conversation. You do have a RLA, a required learning activity, due on Sunday, and I'm hoping that you can navigate your way to use something called Padlet. The link is in Activity 3, and I'm going to pop it in the chat. So if you've been bumped out of the chat, just rejoin the chat for the link. If you can't figure it out, don't worry about it. You can post in the forum or you can email it to me and I'll post it on Padlet for you. So next week, after you've done that RLA, next week we're going to move away from sports and we're going to explore diverse and unique northern festivals, music, dance, on the land and traditional activities and events. So next week's a really fun week, and I'd like to invite all of you to join us so that we can celebrate those who will be wrapping up and earning their certificate in Northern Recreation Leadership following this learning event. So all the best, everyone. Thank you so much. Merci trop, merci. Nakumi, Kwana. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and next week's call will be on Thursday. So thank you so much. I'm going to end the conference call recording and feel free to stay on if you have some more questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Carolyn. Great to talk to you. We'll chat next week.